Welcome back to Pax Europiana, the podcast about peace in Europe. This is about EU Days, a special day, the 30th of October 2021. Basically, that's only coming because I record this now in February, at the end of February 2021. And I would like to say this will be the first day, where a G20 summit takes place without the participation of the Russian Federation. Because it's time to no longer invite Putin to G20. Now, please, let me remind you, we no longer invited Russia after some period of inclusion towards G8. And then in 2014, after the Russian invasion of Crimea and Donbass and the consequent war and annexation of Crimea and war in Donbass, Russia was no longer invited to the G7 summits. And that's a very good decision, because it's an honor to be invited to such global forums where global politics and economic decisions are made. That means basically G for the great. It's the great seven, the great eight, the great democratic and great 20 in responsibility of the global economy. The idea of such meetings is that the main decision makers of the world economy and of global politics, they don't meet in a way outside of the format of the UN for other reason, and then basically to discuss about global economics additionally to all the institutions we have. It's a bit of a vague format. It should be also formalized. But one thing it's definitely not. It's not a dialogue with aggressor states. And that's why, because the logic is very clear. Russia aggressed the world order with the annexation of Crimea and the war in Donbass, and therefore was no longer welcomed in the G7 2014. And up to now, and for the moment, it will leave Ukraine. And there are many other things happened. In the meantime, I will come to them. But the thing is, now we have this G20 format. And because actually the G20 is a quite reasonable format, what it means, the G20. G20 means the biggest economies of the world, basically all economies who have over a trillion GDP, and they can meet. It's not a really formalized thing, but normally it's like this, that it is from America, from Argentina, Brazil, Mexico, the United States of America, and Canada. That's the big economies of that continent. And then in Africa, it's only South Africa. And from Europe, it's the United Kingdom. But also the G3 and the G7 normally has Italy for historic reason, but also it's a quite big economy, no doubt. But also France and Germany and also Spain is popping up at G20 summits also, because it's a prestigious thing. And there's always the question why then other countries are not represented, especially the Netherlands. And always Poland is reminding that it's also no longer such a small economy. And even Switzerland has actually quite a big economy. I will come to that in a moment. And then also we have from Asia, we have also Saudi Arabia, Japan, South Korea, Australia, India, Indonesia, China. That's all fine, I think. We need also to involve China more in the global economy. And Saudi Arabia is obviously also an important partner in the energy world and also representative for in many ways, also for the Arab world. And so that's actually a very reasonable format to have it that way. Also, we don't need to formalize everything so much. So I think actually I'm very much pro G20. But there is one problem. This needs to be like the summit of the OECD and countries additionally invited. So it's very good that all the OECD countries meet, and also the non-OECD countries, which also cannot join so easily, like especially Saudi Arabia, because it's obviously no democracy, but also very clearly China. So it's very good OECD plus open format, a G20, reaching out a hand towards Saudi Arabia and also to communist China. I fully support that. And all the others like India, Indonesia, and also Argentina and Brazil, it's anyhow a major scandal of neglect of the European policymakers and the American policymakers that we have not managed to include all these countries in the OECD in the last 10 years. Shame for all the responsibilities of this neglect of reckless kind of sleepiness of the OECD. This needs to be rectified anyhow. But the most important thing is obviously the question of Russia, because only Russia wages war in Libya, in Syria, in Ukraine, in Georgia, intervenes in European and American elections, funds all the lunatic fringe parties everywhere, and is basically bent on a kind of global revanchist kind of agenda. It's also the main instigator of this BRICS rebellion, and so on and so on. And it's now, with the Navalny case, openly also for anybody in the world to see, also not a democracy anymore. Because if you imprison the main opposition leader, send him in a labor camp, you are not a democracy. There is no doubt about it. Anyhow, Russia was not a democracy for 20 years. It was only the pretense of democratic competition. It was never seriously meant, especially after the first re-election of Putin and his silent takeover in 2003 and then 2004. And but absolutely not since 2013, since his illegitimate third term re-election. And so we cannot call it a democracy in any meaningful term. It's a very questionable Russia is even in the Council of Europe. But definitely now we have to see what to do about it. Obviously, Russia is a nuclear armed country. So we have no kind of real force and coercion possibility. But the one thing we can really do with Russia is basically to ignore it and also not to invite it. Because ignoring is obviously also very difficult because of its power and abilities to impose itself on the region. But we should at least not honor the Russian president with an invitation to important bilateral meetings. I have made already many podcasts about the visits of shame and Vienna, Austria, Budapest, all this kind of complicity and complicity visits, and they were terrible. But what we also need to really finish now is the invitation of Russia towards the G20. You might remember the most embarrassing moment was not in Osaka, because these summits happen normally yearly, and they happen, I think the G7 was created in 1999 already out of the urge to include most of the developing world. That was very good. But then obviously there was again this period of neglect where the OECD was not reformed and opened, and so BRICS developed. And this kind of lofty format of G20 was allowed to replace OECD enlargement. Because as I said already, the G20 should be a format of the OECD plus invited friends and partners. And I made that, I think, abundantly clear what to do. So it's very clear that Russia should not be in G20. And this is something we really can do. I understand we cannot retake Crimea and Donbass. We cannot militarily confront Russia with its nukes and its ability and its military ability. And I'm not calling ever. I've never said that. But, you know, the thing is, we also don't need to do like that, that everything would be business as normal, if it's not. And to expel some medium-level Russian state officials, like they have now done from the European Union, or do nothing like Biden has done in his first month. Hopefully he will be really back. But now I'm doubting it actually gradually. So the thing is, there is a real need to counter Russian aggression in the ways that really hurt Putin personally. And personally, what he really loves is to be invited to Vienna, to EU capitals, to go around the world, to be an important power broker, because that's also very much his claim to legitimacy. It's very important to understand it from the side of the Russian psyche and the Russian electorate, because in his fake electoral system, he perceives, he allows himself, and he allows to misconceive his own role in the world as a kind of continuation of the Soviet Union superpower status. So he goes out into Russian media explaining that he is the guarantee personality to make sure that the Russians are respected again as a superpower. So this kind of summits with the American president, this kind of summits in G20, this kind of global jamborees like BRICS and others, and this kind of one-to-one meetings with important global personalities like the president of the European Union and the president of America, the president of China, and this exactly such kind of meetings as the G20 is very much the basis of his claim to legitimate kind of representation of the Russian Federation on the world stage as a global superpower, which keeps his popularity in Russia high. Because, you know, that's of course in any country popular to be invited, respected, recognized as an important, you know, global actor. I mean, that's why people do that. Yeah? That's why leaders go to other places to show recognition, respect, and status. It's not the wonderful talks they have. It's about the pictures. It's about the pictures in the TV screens in the evening to the electorate. Look, I'm on one-to-one with the global good and healthy and wealthy and bright. That means basically to clean his reputation. He says with such meetings and that all the things he does against Navalny, for example, but against the Russian middle class, against the regions, against the Chechenians, against the Ukrainians, internally and externally, doesn't matter for the global recognition of him. His status is just fine. Because he goes in October to Rome, and that's the EU day of shame if we really have him, or that's the EU day for courage if we really don't have him. Now, in this age of digital meetings, let's see if it's anyhow taking on physically. But even if it's not physically, you know, if it's only digitally, don't switch on his screen. There is blink, blink, blink for Russia. And certainly he should no longer be welcome in any European Union or NATO capital. And that's together already 36 states in the world. Yeah? And so that's no bilateral visits, no going to Russia, no kind of kowtowing to him. Let's just let him do his thing. We have anyhow almost no influence on how he does things back home. We have to also concede this kind of weakness. Because if we are in the illusion that we can change his behavior by sanctioning officials from the court case of Navalny, that might be very targeted, yeah. But you know, Putin is completely above that. Yeah? He couldn't care less if the Secretary General or the Prosecutor General can travel or have a bank account in the European Union. They all have bank accounts anyhow in the Seychelles or in Mauritius or in Grenada or wherever they have it. And certainly not in Berlin or Vienna. And even that, that is really not so important for President Putin, who is already in triple billions of wealth, if some of his minor officials, for him, totally replaceable, neglectively zero-sum personality, who is just having to do his job and will be removed if not required anymore, then he can travel or not. Yeah. Does it disturb President Putin? I'm confident it does at all. It doesn't at all. So here is really the point. What really we can do is no longer do these visits of shame, no longer do these group pictures with the president of Russia. We anyhow have to live that we have also Saudi Arabia has also a very dubious reputation. Also with China, we are in a complicated relation, there's no doubt. But there is at least, you know, there's a reason to talk, to dialogue, because they have done us no harm. They have not sent any tanks to Ukraine. They have not killed people in the streets of Vienna. I don't know about, because everybody tells me Russia, China is so dangerous. I really don't know about Chinese contract killers in Berlin or in Washington or in Vienna. I know only about Russian contract killers in Berlin, Vienna. And London. I have not heard about Chinese kind of tanks in Ukraine. The only thing the Chinese want to do is buy companies in Ukraine to produce tanks, okay? That is also maybe dubious. But they have never made any kind of claim to invade any territory of a neighboring country, to my best knowledge. And even in the case, you know, there might be a military confrontation, okay, then we have to be ready and to defend Taiwan. And I'm totally against the mistreatment of human rights in from East Turkestan to Xinjiang to Hong Kong. There's thousands of things which are wrong in China and in Saudi Arabia, but it makes sense to have a dialogue and to talk and to do business and to hope for improvement and to criticize them. But what is actually the sense in criticizing Russia? We do that since 20 years and it has not changed. It has massively deteriorated, in fact. Yeah. So then to honor, obviously, President Putin, just in reality, to hope to make some energy deals, yeah, and to hope to be on his good sides for future board memberships. Yeah. That's basically in the hearts and minds of the many of the European politicians. Don't break with Putin, because it might be one day still very useful when I'm back in business, or I then run as a consultant some contacts towards the state energy company, or I will be basically rewarded with some contracts or board positions later if I drop out of politics. Yeah? That's exactly the situation. So they don't want to do that because they exactly know how important it is for Putin to be at the G20 summit. You have hardly seen it in any time so happy, like in the Argentinian summit with the major high five with the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia. I mean, this is exactly what he loves, yeah? To be with the presidents and with the big names of the world, to be seen as the equal of them, or if not, the coordinator, the mastermind, yeah? And all these minor states. That's actually also the problem of the G20, because it somehow perceives the rights of the big nations to be more important above the regional minor states, like Ukraine, let's say. So he invades Ukraine, but is welcomed at the global level, because in reality, most international statesmen, they don't care for Ukraine. That's the message in the talk shows, in the Russian TV. That's the perception we give with such invitations. And also then, when you have invited somebody, you have to also treat him friendly. You have to meet bilaterally. You have to also do the common group pictures, and so on and so on. All the things we don't want to do. I mean, we have nothing against the Russian people. Don't get me wrong. There is wonderful and great people there as well. But not under President Putin, not him personally. Because who do you think has ordered this kind of tanks moving and their annexation? Do you think the Russian state, the Russian Federation is like an autonomous political being which works outside of the control of the Russian president and has its own kind of automatism, which he doesn't control? You think how long you would survive in a Russian hierarchical system if you attack other countries or kill other people without kind of political backing of that? I mean, it's not exactly like that. This is all ordered by him directly. I mean, he would be really a very bad president of Russia in his own perception if he wouldn't allow everybody to poison other people without him agreeing. And he has then basically to sort it out politically, other people's acts. I mean, he would be that would be unbelievable. That's totally unrealistic. The assumption that he didn't know is this typical kind of dictatorship assumption where people have it. If he just would know it, he would stop it. Yeah, we have had that in Germany and Austria, this kind of assumption. I'm sure the leader didn't know. Oh, yes. Yeah. No, this is all ordered from the top down. It's just a little bit diffused in a kind of to somehow have credible kind of deniability towards the public and to other international leaders when you say, oh, I didn't know it. I really didn't know it. Oh, somebody was killed. Oh, that's really bad. We are rule of law state. We are totally against that. Somebody invaded Ukraine. Oh, I'm sure that must be somebody else. I didn't order that. I'm sure. I know what I signed. And so on and so on. You understand? This is really, you know, totally fabricated kind of pretense of not being in charge, when in reality this is a very hierarchical kind of organization. On the top is President Putin, and he is ordering these things. He is ordering these invasions. He is ordering this political interventions in the US and in the UK and in other countries. Could you imagine a scenario where some third-level officials decides to do a major electronic warfare act in the United States without any kind of at least passive approval of his hierarchy? I mean, the world is not like that. No, no, no. So G20 is very good. I'm very much for G20. But G20 must be reorganized, must be attached to OECD, must be an open format also for non-members, but at least they should have this kind of intention to join or intention to be part of the free world. Yeah? Because we don't need to meet with the non-free world in that sense. Even when Russia is 1.5 trillion, the world is now 86 trillion GDP. So it's basically around 1.5% of the, or maybe 2% of the global GDP. And that's about it. Yeah. So 1.7, yeah, let's say. That's it. You know, that's it. It's not more than that. And China is, of course, an important player. We have to have a dialogue with China. I totally agree. I'm also for this Tsai agreement or whatever, the EU agreement for trade with China. And I'm for trade, change for trade. We've done that for 40 years. It's working. It's not perfect. But who will tell us that it will not work in the next 10 years? And we have to obviously keep up the pressure on China. But we have to work with China. So China, also Saudi Arabia, also Turkey, obviously, very much welcome in G20. A little bit of a reformed format, that's very good. But definitely no Russia in G20. And I call on the American president, on the British prime minister, on the Canadian prime minister, on all European officials from member states and the EU, on President Michel and President von der Leyen, simply do not attend the G20 summit. Do not attend it if the Italian organizers do not refrain from inviting President Putin. It's now Mario Draghi to be the Prime Minister of Italy. He is anyhow a very good European personality. He understands all the context. He understands Russia is economically not necessary in the G20 and politically it's a major liability. So make it clear, the Americans, the Canadians, the British and the Europeans, and hopefully also then the Japanese, yeah, that we will not go to Italy, to Rome, once the president of Russia is really threatens to turn up. He shall not be invited. If he is invited, then hold the free world doesn't go. Let him meet in with the Sheikh of Arabia and with whoever wants to go, with President of China in Rome, if that's what the Italian want. But definitely there shall be no American president. And I call on all European leaders and Western leaders from Canada and from America, no more invitations for President Putin. No more summits with him. No more bilateral meetings. Yeah? He does all these things in Belarus. It's him who backs up Lukashenko. He does all these things in Syria. It's him who backs up Assad. Yeah? He does all these crimes in Donbass and Crimea. It's basically all him. So honoring him with a bilateral summit is absolutely the wrong signal. It shows that you don't care for the people of Russia and for the people of Belarus and Syria and Ukraine. It's outrageous to meet him. It's absolutely the wrong thing. So no more meetings. You can even reduce the sanctions against the minor officials because it makes no aspect. Yeah? But don't meet President Putin in no capacity. Outside, you can meet him at the UN. Yeah, I would maybe, if you want to meet him once a year, he's allowed to go out to go to the September meetings of the General Assembly. And there, if it's anything necessary to talk to him, good. The rest can be done digitally, and that's about it. But no more summits, no more meetings, no more invitations, and certainly no G20. And certainly no visits of shame in Vienna, no visits of endorsement of gas deals in Moscow, not from the Austrians, not from the Hungarians, not from the no EU NATO member shall open the door for President Putin anymore and none of these kind of visits of shames anymore, and definitely also no more high five with the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia in Argentina at the framework of the G20, and no other kind of similar events in the future. Only the UN in September, there even Gaddafi was, yeah, and this we cannot avoid in the current setup of the UN. Good, then everybody who has to talk to him, you have anyhow ambassadors to do the regular business. And if anybody wants to have a selfie with Putin, then go to the September events in New York. But no other formats, no other kind of meetings, no G20 anymore. Please, we have to get to be a bit serious, yeah? Because we are like non-serious at the moment, unfortunately. And our Russian politics is really perceived as betrayal and treason. And this has to stop. And this is the simplest step to do. No more G20, no more Rome summit. And we will see if Putin is at the 13th of October in Rome, hopefully only as a tourist, it's fine. If he turns up at the G20 summit, that's a really sign of a debacle and of a disastrous European and Western policy towards Russia. If not in the meantime, he has really changed to the good side and he has removed his troops from Crimea and Donbass and Syria, but there is no chance for that. So really, let's make sure that he is nowhere close to Rome, neither digitally, neither physically, that he has to stay in Russia because, and he has anyhow a beautiful house in the Black Sea. He can spend a lot of time there. We will not harass him. He can do in Russia. We have anyhow no kind of coercion possibilities to change his behavior. He can put Navalny for the rest of his life into a gulag. We cannot change that. But we don't have to shake his hand. We don't have to welcome him and hug him. We don't have to have selfies with him. We don't have to dishonor our own international system with such aggressors and criminal kind of jailers, gulag kind of systems and anti-democrats. We don't have to dishonor our international system, the liberal world order. If it means something, we say no to Putin at the G20. And I call on everybody, no Putin at the G20, not in 2021, and never ever again. Thanks a lot.